Hi, welcome to the January 2017 edition of the Catherine Swatchard Hypnotherapy Podcast. I'm delighted to be welcoming back Lindsay Shepherd today. So Lindsay's been on this podcast before talking about her work as a hypnotherapist, specifically working with fertility. Today, Lindsay's going to be talking about the work she does with weight loss and particularly people who are very obese. Lindsay's story is actually fascinating. We'll go into it in lots of detail. But Lindsay herself has lost a dramatic amount of weight, and we'll talk about the tools and techniques she uses and also then the tools and techniques you can bring into your ordinary everyday life. So Lindsay, welcome. It's lovely to have you here again. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about the typical clients you tend to work with weight loss.
It's good to be here again. Thank you for asking, Catherine. So generally, I try and work with clients who are what are classed as super morbid obese. And that's a really, in fact, it's not really a very nice definition, is it? Generally, it's that you would need to lose more than half your body weight. So if you look at BMI, which actually is rather a flawed concept anyway, but in super morbid obesity, it does actually work. So you would be more than 50% over your BMI, so between 50 and 60% or higher. So, for instance, if somebody was 5'4", their weight should generally be around sort of a 10 stone mark, between 8'10 and 10 stone. Someone who would be super morbidly obese at that height would be 22 stone, something like that. So we're talking very significantly overweight, very significantly. So that in fact, your mobility would be affected and your health would be affected. That would be a definition.
Okay, so you tend to work with people who really do have quite significant health problems and things. How did you get into this specific niche of work?
I actually really sort of fell into it by accident. I was quite overweight myself. I wasn't classed as super morbidly obese, but certainly morbidly obese. And I realised, I know it sounds really silly because I was obviously very fat, but I realised that my mobility was being affected. I couldn't really bend down to do up laces on shoes. I was getting quite out of breath. And I did actually have no health problems at all. And I had that checked. And funnily enough, my cholesterol was quite good. But I realised that it was just going up and up. And I needed to do something for myself. So what I did is I became my own client. So I wrote myself a plan just as I was due for a client. Wrote myself some self-hypnosis programs. In fact, I recorded them rather than doing self-hypnosis so I could just sit there and listen rather than do self-hypnosis. And I made all sorts of techniques for myself. I also started to do a lot of exercise. And I always was sporty, so that actually wasn't a huge challenge. But I got people to help me as well. I worked with a personal trainer. I did work a little bit with a nutritionist, but that was just really to get some ideas of what to do. And eventually I lost just over 9 stone, which is really good. I also set myself a lot of challenges. And while I was doing that for myself, I started to work with a client who was, the mental health team actually contacted me and asked me to work with her because she was very agoraphobic and couldn't leave her house. And when I got to see her, what they hadn't told me is she was extremely overweight. In fact, she was 37 stone. And I was quite shocked and surprised. And the agoraphobia was really because she was too frightened to go out because people would abuse her. They would bully her. She told me about some TV programs she was watching with a guy called Jesse Pavelka. I hadn't heard of him before. I watched some programs and he was working with super morbidly obese people. I contacted him really just for some advice. And before I knew it, I was actually sort of working with him. We became good friends. And that's how I really started to work with what are classed as super morbidly obese people. And it's fascinating because you really get to know them because you're with them a long time.
Lovely. Well done. 9 stone. That's so impressive. Which techniques did you use to help yourself do that? What sort of ways did you do that?
Well, one of the classic techniques, which most hypnotherapists will know, is something that I know as the Dickens pattern, but I think some people call it different crossroads or different things like that. So I looked at my future if I carried on the way that I was, and then looked at my future if I made those changes, when I made those changes. So it's like being at a crossroads. You choose which path you want to go. I did that. I did a lot of motivational work with myself. I used to leave myself little notes around the house, write on a dry marker on my mirror in the morning. I'm not a very fluffy type of person. I'm quite pragmatic. So they were always sort of simple things. I did a lot of listening to my tapes, working on real motivation and praising myself, doing some really important things. And I started to do some things which I call NSVs, non-scale victories. So they were things like, they're nothing to do with weight. They were things like little goals, very small goals. Because when you're very, very overweight, it's a huge step to start thinking of yourself as thin or slim or a normal weight. It really, really is. And having said that, I use the Dickens pattern. I don't use that with my super morbid obese clients because very often they're living the worst case scenario. So it actually doesn't really work. So the non-scale victories were things like I was traveling on an aircraft about 3 months after I started my plan, and I wanted to do the seatbelt up rather than ask for an extender on the seatbelt, which I needed to do. And I did that, bend over and do my shoes up. But what I was noticing is I actually was bending over and doing my shoes up for months before I actually thought, oh, I'm doing that. And things started to become natural, things that I couldn't do before. And then I started to set myself challenges, like doing the moonwalk, things like that. But I was constantly on it. I wrote things down. I really worked at it and I was really, really committed. And if things went a bit off plan, I would look at why, do thought forms, write down. When I caught myself saying something negative, I would think, okay, right, write that down. What's the other side of this? How can I do that? It was just really constant work that then became a habit. So it wasn't work at all.
And also when you start seeing those results, it stops being work as well because you're seeing the benefits of it. So you basically became your own client. So for people who are very obese, maybe exercise is quite a challenge for them. What are simple ways they can start implementing exercise into their everyday life?
There are actually lots of things people can do. We're blessed now with YouTube. So there's almost, there's everything on YouTube. But really, movement is the most important thing. I haven't actually worked with someone who's completely bedridden, but certainly people who find it very hard to walk from one room to another. So I suggest things like just lifting your feet up from the ground, moving your arms. I always ask them to get involved with perhaps a trainer. And there are so many personal trainers that will work with super morbidly obese people. They really do. And they actually find it fascinating. They really do. But there is so much just movement. And actually, that's a key word as well. I don't call it exercise. It's movement. That's the most important thing. Just get yourself moving and raise that heart rate a little bit. And you will start to reduce weight quite quickly simply because you're moving quite a heavy load around. So therefore, you're using more calories than someone who's quite slim.
So what kind of sort of challenges and obstacles or what were the difficult things that you had to face and maybe the difficult things your typical clients have to face with losing weight?
One of the things that actually struck me, and Jesse Pavelka discussed this at one of the meetings I had with him, is generally when you perhaps 6 months in and you're reducing your weight quite well, it really depends on what size you start off in the first place. But I was noticing differences and people could see the difference in me. But if people are extremely overweight, you don't necessarily visually see differences. It's really about the way you feel. And it gets harder. You would think 6 months in it actually would be easier. But for someone who's significantly overweight, it actually does get harder because they're not necessarily seeing the changes that they want to see and also the realisation that this is going to take a lot longer. One of my clients who's lost now 18 stone, I've been working with her for just under 3 years. So that is quite a significant amount of time. And also, a lot of people haven't ever really been what they would consider a normal size. And that's their definition, not mine. And perhaps they find it a challenge to then become that size. They might have perhaps hidden themselves away from the world, not gone out. They're getting attention from, the opposite sex, or they have to go out and do things. And there is another sort of slightly darker side. Some people have actually haven't been able to work because they can't move, their mobility is affected, and they now have to go out to work. And that's a real challenge. Most people actually do want to, but there have been the occasional person that, you know, doesn't really want to go back to work. there is a point that with some of the clients that I've worked with, they're on disabled living allowance benefits, and they are things that you can actually use to spend your, you can spend your money any way you like on that. So quite a few of my clients pay for the sessions that way. So then they might lose that and they can't necessarily pay for the sessions. But really it's the commitment. And I do repeat an awful lot of things. We go over and over sessions, which generally as hypnotherapists we wouldn't really do the same sessions, but I do that quite a lot. But it's really considering the motivation and the persistence and the commitment. That's the most important thing. And that persistence and commitment has to last.
So you've mentioned your work with Jessie, which sounds really interesting. So what was it that you were doing? Was that involved in telly, or maybe you can talk a little bit about what that work was?
Now, I didn't do any of the work with telly, unfortunately. But Jessie used to have what we call, what he called Pavelka days, where you could pay to see him, and you spent the whole day with him. It was usually groups of 10. And I was involved with one of those groups of 10, so you're sort of mentoring that group. And he had what he called the Pavelka Health Revolution, where I was an ambassador there. There were three of us. And all the Pavelka days come together. So you have this support group, really, sort of motivation, kick up the backside, really. He has four strands, which he slightly changed the way. So it's movement, which he now calls sweat. Nutrition, food, mind. He's very, very convinced about how the mind makes all the difference. And I absolutely agree with that. And I've just forgotten what the fourth one was. Oh, family. Family. Family is about who you work with, not necessarily your blood family, because quite often your blood family aren't always that helpful. Or they don't want to see you get hurt, or they protect you in certain ways. So family was actually what I was really involved in, being that person, that point of contact, that looking after people, kicking their backside if they needed to. And I am a bit of a backside kicker, because another thing actually which leads to this is I do something called excuse busting. And I generally write down everything that the client says that I consider an excuse. And on the third session, I present them with this list of things that they've said. I don't do it straight away, because I want to get their trust as well. And I want to sort of get a feel of what they think. And then we do some excuse busting. Sort of excuse or reason. You know, is this really a reason that you can't do things? Is this really a reason? And I very, very rarely find any of them are true reasons. And that's what I'm there for.
Absolutely. I mean, mindset is so important. And you mentioned earlier about if people have never been slim, I hear all the time, you know, I'm just the fat one, I've always been little Miss Piggy, those kinds of things, which then if you have that identity, it's hard to change. It is hard to change. So what are the most common excuses that you tend to hear in your practice?
I would say, without a doubt, the most common excuse is, I haven't got time. I haven't got time to cook good meals, I haven't got time to exercise, I haven't got time to do this. And then we break down where they're spending their time. And if I'm working with the more super morbid obese people, they have plenty of time. They really do. But all of us have time. If we look at how much time we spend watching the television, looking at our iPad, all those other things, everyone can find an hour in their day. And it doesn't always need to be a straight hour. Or you can batch cook, or you can do your preparation. I like people to do a menu plan for the week. Only if they've got it down as I must eat this on a Monday, if they want to eat it on a Tuesday, that's fine. As long as they do seven breakfasts, seven this, seven that, it's most important. But time is the real excuse. Or I've got to do this, or my family, I have to take my family everywhere. And I tell them it's time to become selfish. It really is. You must say, this is for me. And you know that thing when you're on the plane. I'm sure you use this yourself, Catherine, that when they're doing the safety demonstration, then they say, when the mask comes down, put your own mask on before helping someone else. You can't help other people. You can't look after your family if you're not looking after yourself. And once people realise that, I think they get it. Yeah,
and actually, For those of you listening, this links on really nicely to a previous podcast with Chris Dix, personal trainer, where he talks as well about practical ways of, if you don't have time, actually ways that you can find time for healthy eating and exercise. And it is quite simple, actually, if you just sort of plan it a bit, think about it a bit. So what have been the biggest benefits for you of losing the weight? How's your life better now?
Well, there are lots of, I mean, my life is quite good. I must confess, it was quite good anyway. I was already working with weight management clients, and I always felt I had to justify myself. I was very successful working with them. I always said, well, actually, I'm quite fat myself. But now I have absolute confidence and congruence that I know that I can work with them. But generally, it's being able to do anything I want. I used to, now I look back on it, I don't think I was really realising it at the time, but I used to go to places and think about, you know, can I fit in that chair? I don't want to go to that restaurant because they got booths and I might get stuck, which actually was probably quite ridiculous. But I can do virtually anything I want, really. And I do. I now, believe it or not, I now run. I do all sorts of things. And, you know, sometimes I think, why am I doing this? I'm actually quite old now. but I like the fact that I've got opportunities. I've got choices that I either didn't have, because some of those things I wouldn't have been able to do, but mostly I wouldn't have allowed myself to do. And I can buy nice clothes. Who doesn't like that?
Yeah, absolutely. The health benefits, how you feel, the clothes, everything just makes such a big difference. So we know all the statistics that obesity is on the rise in the Western world, particularly in children. Do you have any idea why that is, or what's your opinion about why generally people are getting fatter?
That's a really interesting question, because not so long ago, people who were poorer in monetary terms, they were the people who were very, very slim. But now actually people who have less money are actually really fat, really obese. So that's an interesting thing. Food that's not very good for us is cheap. There's no doubt about it. However, if you really look at things, if you start to, you know, buy some meat and buy your vegetables, you can actually make a casserole or a stew really stretch. There are things like that. But we live in what's known as an obesogenic environment. There is food everywhere. When I was young, it was actually considered quite rude to eat in the street. And now it's completely common, isn't it? And the food that we have that's easy to cook is processed food. Everything is processed. It is deliberately made so that we will eat more of it, that we're encouraged to eat. My particular bugbear is that cooking isn't taught anymore in schools, proper cooking. People don't know how to cook, and then they're passing that on to their own families. We don't sit at the table and eat. We're not looking at what we're eating. We're watching the television. All of these things are creating a perfect storm of obesity. And I know that this will sound quite strange, but nowadays you can buy clothes to very large sizes. Once upon a time you couldn't. So you got to that stage where you think, well, I can't, I'll have to go around naked unless I lose some weight. And now you don't have to do that. I mean, I'm not necessarily saying that's right or wrong, but I'm saying that it is easy to be large, and it's almost becoming acceptable. People don't realise that actually you might be fit and well now, but you could become ill. You really could. And we can exercise when we're large. We really can. There's a running club that I belong to that is specifically for people who are overweight. There are plenty of opportunities, but we have this whole obesogenic environment. Go to an airport. There's the place to sit. Go to an airport any time of day. People are just eating and drinking. It's just there, out there, and it's very sad. And unless we do something, it will get worse.
And you mentioned earlier about the idea of a family that may not be your blood family, but the people you associate with, and how that impacts on people's weight. Are you able to tell us a little bit more about how the environment you're in and the people you're with actually can affect people's weight?
It's really interesting about environments, because you often get groups of friends, both male and female, it's not exclusive to a gender, that always like the fat friend. You know, that I'm okay because there's always someone a bit fatter than me, so they might encourage. I worked once with a client who almost like to please everybody. So she would not drink, but she would be the driver. So obviously everyone wanted to invite her out for dinner, and her social life was simply going out for dinner. So we had to work on her saying no. Families, they love you, so they want to give you what you want, but that's not necessarily what you need. Sometimes people will, your family will buy you some donuts or something like that, something that you like, because, oh, she's feeling a bit down today. But in fact, that's the worst thing you can do. You need some encouragement. You know, you can't have a whole loaf of bread and a whole packet of ham. It's not good for you just because you like it. Your family really are becoming almost like a co-conspirator with you. And very often that happens with clients with me, because obviously I share my experiences. I show them some pictures of when I was very overweight. And I show them one picture when I was really dressed up and I'd had my hair done. It was a wedding anniversary picture. And I did actually look really nice. But now I look back at it and I think, oh my word, that's just awful. But, you know, that was when I was looking my best. So, you know, goodness knows what I was looking like when I was looking my worst. But very often, people try to get me on side. So maybe they've had a binge or they've not really been committed. And they'll say things like, oh, well, you know what it's like. You know. And almost want me to be like a co-conspirator with them. And I won't have that. I really won't. But likewise, I don't necessarily want to say to them, okay, I'm off to run a marathon. You're going to come too. we need that balance. But people can be... people can be deliberately obstructive because they don't want you necessarily to be thinner than them or different. They worry about you. But people can also be obstructive by being loving. And you need to identify that. It's important.
Yeah, and I think I see that a lot with, unfortunately, very overweight children, where actually their parents are just being loving and trying to, you know, give them ice cream for a treat and take them, you know, that kind of thing, whereas actually it's really damaging them. But it's so complicated. It's such a complicated issue with food and doing things for people and identity, all those things. So what are a couple of just really simple ways that people can start getting on the right track?
One of the easiest ways, and a way actually a lot of people quite resist, is write down every single thing that passes your lips, eating or drinking. And you can do that before you even think about changing your habits of eating. Write down what you're eating and then really look at it and think, okay, what am I actually eating? Do I need all of this amount? And I also ask people to write down who they're with. So maybe there's some influence about the person that you're with. Were you on your own? Because quite a few people obviously eat secretly. Is there someone that's influencing me? How were you feeling? Food, we use food emotionally in the Western world. We celebrate with food. We go out for a meal. We commiserate with food. You know, after a funeral, you're going to have food. we use food. And we don't always need it. So I ask them to really write down everything. And then you can identify, you know, I was feeling a bit down or I wasn't eating properly here, so I could do that. So that's the first thing. And the other thing I ask my clients to do, because I'm not a nutritionist. I do have a nutritional qualification, but it's not really one that I would use with my clients. I ask them to look up everything they can possibly look up to find out about various forms of eating, clean eating, what sort of looks. Ban the word diet, because this is long term. It's your eating plan now. This is the way that you live. But the writing down is incredibly important. You must be honest with yourself. You really must. You're only lying and cheating yourself. I don't really care if you lie, really, but you should.
Great. So if people want to get in touch with you to find out more, what's the best way for them to do that?
They can look at my website, which is www.lindsayshepherdhypnotherapy.co.uk, or they can phone me on 01202 511096. I'm also on Twitter as Dorset Hypnosis, and I have a Facebook page, Lindsay Shepherd Hypnotherapy.
Great, and I'll link to all those in the notes below this podcast, so you can all find those nice and easily. Well, thank you, Lindsay. It's been a pleasure to see you again. Thank you very much for coming in today.
Thank you very much for having me. And next time I see you, I'll be able to tell you that I've run the London Marathon, which I never thought I'd say.
Oh, lovely. Thank you.